You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I am your host, Mark Shea, and we are here on the air, as we are here every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about life, the universe, and everything here on Connecting the Dots. And today we got a special guest. In addition to my co-host, who will be with us in just a minute, Mr. Michael Litchens, we also have my good friend, Trisha Bulla. She is the founder of the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society, and she is busy all over Asia doing the work of a Catholic evangelist in Asia. So and today we are actually talking to her. She's out there in Rome, not Rome, New York, no siree, Bob, Rome, the real Rome, the eternal city itself. So she is speaking to us from Rome, Italy. How you doing, Trisha?
I'm doing great, Mark. How about you?
I'm doing well. I never cease to be astonished by what technology can achieve. So I'm sitting here in Seattle, and you're in Rome, and here we are on the radio talking to heaven alone knows how many people out there in Radioland. So that's
that technology won't get you that gelato I just had.
Well, you know, there's some things that can't be digitized, and one of them is it's just the flavor. You can't do that. So but welcome to Connecting the Dots. Glad to talk to you again. The last time I saw you, we were taking a walk in the woods. Mm-hmm. Here in Seattle. You came, paid a visit, and so we wound up taking a stroll through the neighborhood, and you got to see the our Candy Cane Park Trail. So yes. Near where I live is something called Candy Cane Park, because the monkey bars have candy cane stripes on them, and so that it got to be called Candy Cane Park. And there's this lovely trail through the woods, so we took a walk through. So how are you doing? What brings you to Rome?
Yeah, well, this past week we just had the Dominican Mission Congress, which was focusing on really the mission of the Order of Preachers, who just closed out their 800th jubilee. 800 yeah. years. That's a good long yes. time to be preaching the gospel. So it was a great congress. A lot of people all over the world, big Dominican family, want to see it. Yeah, just really, really good things happening among the people of God.
Were any of my Dominicans from Blessed Sacrament Parish there? I don't even know. I mean,
No.
Or any West Province Dominicans.
Although, no, it was actually my dear friend, Brother Gregory Liu, who's from California. And okay. he was out here from the Western Dominican province. So okay. that was it's been a fun going around Rome with him. It's his first time here. So
that name sounds familiar. I think he might be one of the people that are on my Facebook page. I think
yes, he might be he is.
Facebook friend. Okay. The name sounded familiar, but I don't think we have ever actually spoken to each other. So what are they talking about at a Dominican? This is on evangelization, I presume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Evangelization and just the nature of the mission to which the Order of Preachers is called. And
okay.
You know, at its summit, it's to preach in a way that points people towards God, to a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ, so uh-huh. that they can really encounter Christ through the Word, and that is the goal. It's the salvation of souls, and okay. that's why they were founded, and So it's looking at, in this modern age, you know, 800 years later, and seeing and looking around and seeing that in many ways the world has changed, but the mission is very much the same. There's still this great need within the world for the salvation that is had through Jesus Christ. And
okay. Very good. You know, one of the things that a lot of people don't know, you know, because the Dominicans have been around for such a long time, one of the things that I discovered about 20 years ago was that the Dominicans, when they were originally founded, were not allowed to even celebrate all of the sacraments. They could celebrate baptism and confession and the Eucharist, and that was it, because their mission was to go and evangelize and make converts and then move on and leave those converts to be pastored by somebody else. And so it shows you how emphatic their evangelistic charism and mission was supposed to be. The idea that they weren't supposed to have any parishes, those are things that happen later because, you know, history happens and you wind up, well, here we are and there isn't anybody else to shepherd these people, so I guess we will have to have a parish after all. And so there wind up being Dominican parishes like the one that I go to. But there was serious consideration about 20 years ago. There was a question that arose among the Dominicans about whether or not they should just give up their parishes, hand them back to the local diocese, and resume just doing what they started out to do 800 years ago, which was just baptize, hear confessions, celebrate Eucharist, and then get out of town. So that's interesting. So what did they talk about at the was there specific resolutions that they came to at this conference, or was it more of an academic conference?
It was a mix. I mean, you had definitely a lot of the speakers, a lot of them had a strong academic background, but they were living the gospel in different ways. I mean, and just even the final day, we had a friar from Africa who works in a hospital. We had a sister from Iraq who was basically there. She was there when ISIS came knocking on their door and they were forced to flee.
Wow.
And then, but we also heard from the people who teach at a variety of universities around the world, and their understanding of what it means to be sent as a missionary. And how we are sent, what it means to be, what mission, when we talk about the word mission, what do we mean? But it also talked about preaching and its various manifestations, not just through the word, but also through art, through our witness of our lives. So it covered a variety of topics, with the theme being sent to preach.
Okay. Did you talk about your work, or were you just there to listen?
I did. We had a lot of breakout sessions, and so a lot of people got to hear my work, and also, evangelization, mission, and mission in Asia specifically, but also the needs of the church and how lay people can serve in those capacities in effective and fruitful ways. And even the master of the order, and he did arrive at the end of seven resolutions that he had come across over the events of the Congress, as well as no doubt months, years of praying and contemplating things. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a big major point he came across was, you know, the lay people play an important role in the mission of the church, as well as within the order of preachers, the Dominicans. And it's important that the Dominican friars, as part of their mission of preaching, also work to raise up the role of the lay people, to empower lay people in their call to evangelization.
Why, this sounds like something that Sherry Waddell should have been at. She would have had a lot to say. I bet she's probably talked to a lot of these guys already. Certainly the Western Dominican province are very familiar with her work as well. Mm-hmm. Just for people who don't know, Sherry Waddell is the author of Forming Intentional Disciples, which is all about making lay people first disciples and then apostles. And this is all about the lay apostolate, because, you know, there's just a whole lot more of us than there are of clergy. What the percentage is. It's like 0.1¾% or something of the church, or 0.01 or 0.001% of the church is ordained clergy. And the rest of it is us, you know. Or some religious, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But the overwhelming majority of the church is lay people. And so the mission is it's about us. And that's why I love what you do, because you're a lay person who is doing lay evangelization in Asia. And I'm just so tickled to see the work that you're doing. One thing I wanted to ask, just getting back to the Congress briefly, I think we're probably going to be running out of time for this segment, but and I was right. So I'll ask my question when I return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Tricia Bula, and we'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Tricia Bula. She is the president, founder of the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society, bringing the gospel, Catholic gospel, to Asia. How did you get started? You just got up one morning and you said to yourself, I'm going to China, and I'm going to be the apostle to China. That's what I'm going to do. That's pretty much what happened, right?
No, not quite.
No?
It was interesting because I was I was a researcher. My focus actually Japan, and I was very inspired by the history of the Japanese Christians in the 16th and 17th century. And for those of you who have watched the film Silence, you've gotten a taste of what it was like for many of the Japanese Christians and the missionaries who served them to endure these horrible persecutions that they faced. And for me, that was something that was very inspiring, and I wanted to learn more. And I spent a year after my undergrad in Japan. And that was just, for me, that was really special. And I got to actually visit some of the martyrdom sites, and it just really inspired me. So when I was doing my research at Stanford, you know, there was this desire to continue to focus on missions in Japan.
Okay.
And so, I was really looking at just working as a researcher, as a historian, and working towards that. And then I had this opportunity to revisit Asia not long after most of my work was done at Stanford. And that's when I really had an opportunity to spend more time with the people in Asia with more of a missionary mindset.
Okay.
In my heart. But it was really God calling me in a way that led other people to cross paths with me when I was in Asia who were also seeking to know about God.
Okay.
So I could have been sitting on a metro, you know, Hong Kong, Japan, you know, places like those. They have trains and metros everywhere. It's a great way to meet people on public transportation. And I could be just passing the time by reading a Bible on the metro, and somebody would turn next to me and say, what are you reading? Oh, this is my Bible. Oh, are you a Christian? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, could you tell me more about your faith? I'm interested in learning more. Really? And yeah, just out of the blue.
Cool?
Yeah. And then, I mean, I could be at a restaurant and I praying before a meal and have somebody me to join them over with their friends for dinner because they saw, just purely because they saw me praying. And then when sitting down with them again, asking, are you a Christian? We see you praying before your meal. We see that you're wearing a crucifix around your neck. You share that with us. And I could be walking through a park. I could be doing any number of things that I found myself doing in Asia and was encountering people who were curious to know more about the faith. And I wasn't really, in my mind, doing anything beyond just being a normal witness of my faith. Uh-huh. Through the normal practice of my faith. And it was these other people who were drawn towards me through the Holy Spirit and who approached me about faith. It wasn't the other way around so much. They were the ones who came to me. And that's when I realized, I think God's trying to say something here.
It's remarkable.
Discernment was key. Prayer was key. And talking to other members of the Christian community, the priests I knew, sisters, and that's a very important part of the discernment process. Yeah. So some time of discerning and also me saying, no, God, not me. Clearly you mean somebody else for this.
I always suspect that God looks at you and says, looks at us and says, who else did you have in mind? Is there someone else in your position that can do this? You know,
goodness,
but that it is remarkable. And that's the impression I've gotten from a number of people who have spent time in Asia, is how open people are to the gospel in ways that you often don't run into. Certainly where I live, here in the Soviet of Washington. It's the least church city and the least church state in the nation here. And I don't often have people stop me on the street and say, please tell me more about the gospel. But that's so fantastic, that you do. I'm not sure what I'm asking. Are there other people that you know who are doing, other Catholics that you know that are doing this work in Asia?
Yes, but they're few.
Few and far between.
They're few and far between. I know a handful of people who are doing missionary work as lay people in different parts of Asia, but they're not. They're very much in the minority, and our Protestant brothers and sisters are outnumbering us by far in most of the places that I have served.
Are there indigenous? I mean, is this Westerners going to Asia doing this? Are there indigenous evangelists in Asia?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there definitely are. I've met people from India who have come to do mission in different parts of Asia. I've met people in China who've gone to different parts of India and Hong Kong and Malaysia to do ministry, which, it's interesting. Also, met people in Hong Kong who do work in Malaysia and in India and in Japan. But again, most, I would say 90% of the time, these people are Protestant and not Catholic. Mm-hmm. And that's where us Catholics really, really got to get going with seeing if we are actually called to mission. And that's a big part of why we founded the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society, is to provide a opportunity for those Catholics who do discern a calling to mission life, whether it's short term or longer term, to have that opportunity where they can be formed, sent, and supported to do mission work in Asia. Whether it's Japan or India, Hong Kong, or wherever else the Lord seeks to send somebody, we want to help make that happen and send well-formed missionaries of the gospel. And that's something that's also really important, making sure that people have properly discerned and are open to the Holy Spirit working through them to form them to serve the spiritual needs of others.
Is this, I guess what I'm asking is, does the St. Francis Xavier Missionary Society, I presume that since it's lay people who are doing this, this is a kind of a tent maker missionary work? So you go to wherever it is you're going and you've got some other job that you do. Like Paul was a tent maker. That's why it's called tent maker missionaries, for people who are not familiar with that term. So you go, you know, wherever it is you go, and you've got a job there as a programmer or, you know, whatever it is you do there. And then you're doing evangelism work on the side, or how does it work?
It's more the flip of the reverse of that. So there is such a great need for greater evangelization, as well as faith formation programs, particularly for young adults in Asia, people in their 20s and 30s, because now there really isn't much beyond Mass and the sacraments for young adults to grow in their faith. Whether you're baptized or not, there's very little out there. And so there's so much to do that there really isn't much opportunity to both work and serve the church. If you really want to do it in a way that's going to be sustainable, you need people who are dedicated to that work, which is why it's important that we have our beloved benefactors back home who can financially support us, because we are unable to draw a regular income enough to sustain our own lives.
Okay.
So we depend on the financial support of our benefactors back home in order to be able to serve the mission.
Okay.
And we're spending, I would say, most of the time, usually we're going 6 days a week doing ministry work.
Okay.
Because there's such a need. Yeah.
And that's primarily, it's teaching, catechesis,
evangelization, prayer, but a lot of catechesis, a lot of teaching.
Okay.
And particularly helping young adults understand how their faith informs their life.
Okay.
What is the intersection of my young adult life with my faith, and how is my faith relevant? What can I learn about the teachings of Christ, of Scripture? Yeah, all that. So,
okay. Do you have to know the native tongue wherever it is you're going, or?
Depends on where you're going. We definitely encourage a background in an Asian language, but it's not necessary for most of the places that we are currently sending people to.
Because English is everywhere.
It is.
Well, and it's a Yeah.
I was going to say one of the bishops in Hong Kong we work with wants us specifically to work with the English speaking community there. So
right. language follows. Whoever is the economic powerhouse in a given age, that's the language that everybody speaks. It's always been that way. So when Alexander the Great is regnant, everybody speaks Greek, and then later it's Latin because Rome takes over. And currently, America is top dog, everybody speaks English, you know. So probably in 100 years, we'll all be speaking Chinese, you know.
Who knows? Yeah, but actually, it is important that we do train our missionaries, and we do, in learning the local language, learning the local culture, the local history, what are the local customs. That's very important.
Trish, I think we're up against a break. But okay. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we will be back with Tricia Bula of the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society on Connecting the Dots right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Tricia Bula, my dear good friend, Tricia Bula, who is, she is speaking to us today from Rome, Italy. You're at the Angelicum?
Yes, yes. It's the Dominican studies here.
Okay. And our signal is a little bit odd. I suspect it's because, how should I put it? Italian Wi-Fi, a friend of mine says that Rome is sort of like, it's like a third world country with really great art and food. And I think that it has kind of third world Wi-Fi. So the signal is a little choppy coming in from Rome today, but that's all right. Hey, that reminds me, since you're in Rome and you're moving among Dominicans as we speak, have you by any chance had a chance to cross paths with Father Bernard Blankenhorn?
Yes.
Did you? Oh, goody. One of my favorite priests in the world, Father Bernard Blankenhorn. We had him to our house, last summer. He was out here briefly for something or other. Was he at this conference then?
Oh, yes. He's here, definitely. And I will see him at morning prayer in less than 8 hours.
Well, tell him hello for me then.
I will, definitely. Oh,
that just tickles me pink. Yeah, I love Father Bernard. He's just one of my favorite priests in the whole wide world. He's this long, tall beanpole of a Dominican. I think he's about 7 feet tall or something, you know, and just incredibly smart, as Dominicans are wont to be. But I mean, he's just like uber Dominican and incredibly smart. And he's one of those people that I just kind of like to listen to him talk about things and just let him go because he's always super interesting. So, did he speak at this conference or is he just attending or?
He was just participating. I mean, just participating. Everybody was participating to some degree, especially in the breakout sessions. So,
okay. Yeah. Wonderful guy. So, how many people have you managed to get helping with the work of the St. Francis Xavier Society yet? Are there doing mission work, for example?
Yeah, we've trained three people on the ground that we've sent to Asia. We have another person that we'll be working with this spring. And then we also have a team back home, as well as local people who work to support the ministry on the ground locally as well, who are locals, members of the church.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I'm just so tickled to hear that. I before we get any further in, just two things I want to do. Want to throw out the phone number in case anybody is out there and wanted to give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. We actually got a call the other day. This is like a red letter day for us. People very seldom call, but I always put the number out there in case they do anyway. 1-573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to talk to Tricia Bula about her work in Asia. And I also want to ask how can people support you? What do they do? They're listening in and they're going, this sounds really good. I'd like to be part of the church's evangelization efforts in Asia, but I don't know what to do next. What can they do?
They can go online to our website at www.laymissionary.org. That's laymissionary.org. And you can donate online to us through PayPal. You can also send something in the mail. And your prayers are always, always welcome. So we're a nonprofit. We have the support of the church, but we need your financial support in order to help our mission be sustainable. And the need is so, so great. So that would be a fabulous way that you can be part of sharing the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ in Asia.
What does it take to support a missionary for like a year? I don't know what the cost of living is in Asia. So
this will vary by region. So if you think about India, for example, where we're developing a mission there versus, say, Hong Kong, you're looking at a difference, and this is inclusive of every cost, including some of the capital costs and support that's necessary. You're looking at a difference between $15,000 and $25,000 for a year. So the cost can vary
$15,000
depending on the region.
Okay, but in some places, it would really only cost $15,000. To support somebody for a whole year. I mean, that's
really
that's a steal, actually. You know, I mean, that's the nice part about the cost of living abroad is, you know, as a friend of mine says, you get more bang for the buck, more rubble for the ruble when you're supporting somebody overseas because the cost of living is so low. And that means as well. It means a huge return on investment if you're thinking in terms of the kingdom of heaven, because in a year, that's an enormous number of people, an enormous amount of catechesis that can be accomplished by one person talking. What kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of people that you reach, for example?
It's interesting. We just had a conversation today on quality and quantity. But even if you're just looking in terms of numbers, and some of the areas that I've served, I can have 100 people packing a room in wow. one session. I've given shops for priests and sisters where we've had 50 priests and sisters gather together for a three-day intensive workshop. And the skills that they're learning through that workshop is going to carry on. It's that sort of train the trainers, if you will. Carry on and passing that on.
Yeah. Isn't that magnificent?
Yeah. No, it's a wonderful way to help pass the faith on through the church. As well as, I mean, if you really think about it, I've had classes where I'll have a Bible study and 18 or 20 people will show up. And that's almost double the size of a Bible study, you know, we could get back home. And yet, even if we only have three or four people show up to, say, a Bible study or a catechism class on a particular week, if those three or four people assemble or the next Mother Teresa, next Andre Bessette, the next St. Francis or St. Dominic de Guzman, I mean, I want to be in that classroom and I want to be preaching and I want to be helping people draw deeper into their faith because you know what? Each and every one of us is called to sainthood.
Yeah.
Each and every holiness. And so my goal is to help us along that way, point us in the direction closer to get us closer towards God and further on that path of holiness according to the calling that each one of us has received.
Right. You know, the nice thing about one of the good things about the work that you're doing, in addition to the fact that you're, you know, saving souls for eternity and so forth, is also the fact that when you get in on the ground floor of evangelistic work in a new place, the chances are also fairly good that you're going to wind up in a history book one of these days, you know. People will remember the work that you're doing right now because it is going to impact so many people later on. And you know, one of the things that is really important for Americans to remember, American Catholics, you know, the narrative that we hear here in the West is so often one of decline. But what people are forgetting is that by the year 2035, the largest Christian nations in the world will be in Asia. Not here anymore, you know, because that's where the gospel is moving. The gospel is moving to Asia and it's moving to the global South.
Yes.
And in those places we have seen, in the last century, I got this information from, John Allen Jr. He gave a talk a few years ago in Denver and he said the church in the global South, and in Asia has grown 7,000% in the last century. So the illusion of decline is exactly that. It's an illusion because it's what we happen to see in some Western countries where there's a lot of cameras present. But what we're seeing elsewhere is spectacular growth for the church. And so it's so important, the work that you're doing. Well, we're coming up against a break here again in a minute. But when we return, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of your experiences that you've had in Japan and in India. I think that people need to hear about what is going on out in the mission field. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with none other than my friend Tricia Bula, the head of the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society. And we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Tricia Bula. She is the founder of the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society. I was wondering if you could tell a couple of stories about some of your experiences out in the field. You've been all over the place. You've been in Japan. You've done some work in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I spent a year working in Japan, and then I also was there for language studies, as well as a few other visits. And I think, I mean, just one of the things that was very moving for me was when I had the opportunity to visit some of the martyrdom sites in the island of Kyushu and see what it was like for the Japanese Christians who were tortured and martyred for their faith. And it was deeply touching. And I've talked to a lot of Japanese. It's, you know, faith is something that a lot of Japanese, they're not, sometimes it depends, you know, not sure where to begin. And I am always, I feel like I'm blessed every time I get to meet a true Japanese Christian because they are not in great number, and their history is so deep and powerful and beautiful. And I met a woman, a Japanese woman, just last year, actually, and was sharing my faith with her. And she had actually become Catholic by way of a few friends who actually were taking her to a Protestant church, but she felt unfulfilled there. And she kept passing by this Catholic church and kept passing by. And so you know, one day she stepped in and the Blessed Sacrament was exposed, and she was just drawn in, and she spent some time inquiring to know more about it. And then eventually she came back for Mass, and it took her a while, but it wasn't long before she just found what she was looking for, jumped into an RCIA program, got baptized, and she can't get enough of her faith now. And for so many Japanese that I've met who've become Christian, this is what it's about. And they become so devout in their faith, so very devout, that when you meet a Japanese Christian, it's always difficult to understand martyrdom, but it's easier to understand how somebody who is a Christian, the way the Japanese take their faith so seriously, are willing and open, should God call them, to, you know, be one among the martyrs, the blessed martyrs, that they could go through those trials, that suffering, to be with Christ in such a way, and be such a bold witness of their faith.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Oh, I mean, and so it's interesting. Now that being said, Japan, in my estimation, and this is having spent a lot of time there, I was a Japan specialist in my research years, and I always saw myself sort of wanting to go back to Japan to carry on the work of Saint Francis Xavier himself. And I actually did a lot of my research on one of his successors, Alessandro Valignano, another great Jesuit missionary to the East. And I to this day, I believe that Japan is still one of the most difficult mission fields in the world.
Yeah.
But again, if you can be part of a Japanese coming into their faith, coming to experience and encountering Jesus Christ, that person will develop a faith that is so beautiful that it will transform your own and inspire your own faith to become that much stronger.
It was always such a shame to me that, in addition to the, you know, the terrible suffering that Japanese endured, Japanese Catholics endured under the shoguns, it was, you know, that the nucleus and the real heart of Japanese Catholicism was located in Nagasaki, and then we bombed.
Not only that, ground zero was Murakami Cathedral.
Ground zero was the Eucharist in Japan. It's just like Japanese Catholicism just can't catch a break, you know? Yeah, and so I listen, one of the things that's so disheartening to me is you know, listening to defenses of the nuclear holocaust visited on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and, you know, hearing people say, oh, wow, you know, it was necessary to, you know, incinerate Jesus in the tabernacle and Japanese babies in their beds. You know, this was good.
And there's debates on both sides of that. And I've listened to both sides, and I think they both have different things to say. But I will say one of the things that there's something known as hibakusha literature, or like the literature that comes out of the atomic bombings. And you will notice two vastly different tones that come out of Hiroshima versus Nagasaki.
Really?
Yes. Okay. So if you were to read any of the atomic bomb literature that comes out of Hiroshima, there's very much this kind of victim mentality, woe is me, we did nothing to deserve this kind of thing. And again, you know, you can debate, does one equate another? And people, the Japanese army did during the Pacific War in Southeast Asia. I mean, the horrible, horrible atrocities. And yet, if you look at the tone of the literature, however, that came out of Nagasaki, very, very Catholic Nagasaki, and it's something strikingly different. Mm-hmm. It's a message of hope, a message of new life, a message of truly rising from the ashes, One of the most famous authors, actually, is was a Catholic Japanese Catholic man, radiologist named Takashi Nagai, and he was a radiologist. Lost his wife and child when the bomb dropped on Nagasaki. And yet his Catholic faith, you know, and just drove him to go and do what he could to help save as many people as possible. And that also happened in Hiroshima. I think there's that deep humanitarian sense within every human being to go out and show that mercy and compassion. Sometimes it's a little latent in certain human beings, but it's there because we're all created in the image of God. And therefore we want to seek after his own heart, which leads us in a natural disposition to want to help others. But what Takashi Nagai did is he went out of his way to help others. And at one point he was taken, stricken down, bedridden, even with cancer. And he did not allow that cancer to stop him from writing and writing messages of hope and of his experiences, but talking about how his Catholic faith really offers new life to those people who experienced this horrible, you know, the atomic bomb made that, you know, never be dropped on a human being again. But what he wrote, it was just this hope again, that this is an opportunity for Japan. You know, not to stare at our shoes, but to stare up at the sky and look to He who gives life. And that was something very different that you saw coming out of Nagasaki.
Interesting. Yeah. The, you know, one of the odd little coincidences about Nagasaki, of course, is when Father Maximilian Kolbe founded a mission there, he built his mission in some place. The local said, this is a bad place to build your mission. You shouldn't build it here because of whatever reason. And he said, yeah, I'm going to build it here anyway. And it wound up being basically shielded from the atomic blast by a hill, that the hill that he built it on. And so that community was able to survive. And I guess the Jesuits there happened to be in a place where the bombing didn't affect them for some reason. I'm not really sure if it was probably a trick of geography or something. But it is, nonetheless, it's so tragic to me that, you know, the one place in Japan where Catholicism really managed to take root was the place that happened to be, was made ground zero, that they literally used the cathedral to site the bomb. That's where they aimed it, was right at the cathedral. We are almost out of time here, but I want to give you one last chance here to tell people where they can go to support your work.
Yes, they can go to our website, www.laymissionary.org. You can support our ministry through prayer, through financial support, and also through serving with us. We are definitely looking for people who want to serve on the ground as Catholic lay missionaries in Asia. We have short-term and long-term programs, and we would love to see you come and discern with us. So it's an incredible, life-changing opportunity.
Fantastic. I want to thank you so much for telling us about your work, and God bless you as you go back to the field. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. Our guest today was Tricia Bula. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We'll be back tomorrow with Rod Bennett here on Connecting the Dots. Oh, and thank you, of course, as ever, to our producer, Danny Head. Until then, have a good evening. Bye-bye.
listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.